Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Cindy Baldwin.
And you are listening to Fiber Talk, the midweek version of the twice-weekly podcast for the needlework artists. Let's see. We have things going on, because we always have things going on. Do not miss last week's show. I say this every time.
Oh, yeah.
But do not miss the last week's show with Elizabeth Ashdown, her book, because it is, and it's one of those books where, as regular needleworkers, you would say, who cares? You know, no interest. But you care, because that book shows you how to make cording and tassels and all kinds of things that you can use to finish off your needlework. Mm-hmm. And then you say, I don't need to make those things because I send mine to a finisher. But imagine if you made a cord out of the same thread as your needlework piece and sent that to the finisher with the piece and said, here, mm-hmm. use this cord to finish it off. Imagine that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. So I have something that... I was thinking about when I was watching last night, and she was talking about making the pom-poms.
Yeah.
And that's a wood clamp.
Yep.
So she was talking about welding a rod onto a clamp. You don't mm-hmm. need to do that. Just get a wood clamp, clamp it onto your table, and then you've got, with the top up,
yep.
two of them, however distant, you know, you want, and then you've got your way to do pom-poms.
Yep. Yeah, and those wood clamps, those handle clamp, squeezable handle clamp, Irwin is the brand that's most common. You can get those for next to nothing at Lowe's or Home Depot. All kinds of sizes.
And lots of different sizes. This one's a short one. You know, it only opens up to about 4 or 5 inches. But I use it, you know, when I'm out stitching someplace and I'm using something in a frame to clamp it to the table.
Yep. Yeah.
So I don't have to carry a heavy frame weight.
Right. Right. Yeah.
So
we're gonna have a section here later on in the show where we talk about tools, but that's one of them that you can get. Yep. For a song. I mean, they cost, you know, just a few bucks, different sizes. Oh, yeah. At Lowe's, Home Depot, Ace, wherever
Ace,
you go, doesn't matter.
Amazon.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
All different brands, but they all work the same way. They're all pretty much the same quality. Yeah.
Right. So you don't need somebody that has welding skills or whatever to make something for you. You can just go buy a couple of wood clamps.
Yep.
And make pom. So I actually want to try making those. I mean, I don't have anything I need pom poms for, but she made it sound so easy.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. And you can immediately visualize how you do it. With
exactly.
a length of yarn wrapped around posts forever, like you'll get dizzy going around the table. But then you could see, you know, because she just said tie off at intervals and then cut.
Well, yeah, and I thought she was going to say just tie it off in the middle and then you've got a big one.
No.
Until she said put ties at intervals. Oh, of course.
Now you got half dozen small ones all in one deal.
One go.
Yep.
Yep.
Yep. Any size you want.
Yeah. So yarn's on sale at Michael's or Joann's or wherever.
Yep.
You know, go buy a couple of skeins and make pom-poms.
Have at it. Yeah. Yeah. Yep. No. So you want this book, Elizabeth Ashdown, Passamontre. I'll never get it right. We need a French person to teach us. But it is just a superb book. If the photo illustrations are excellent. So if you don't like reading or you learn better by seeing photos, it's there. Excellent supporting text for how to make all of these things, how to do basic weaving on a small loom. And I have to say, I'm really, really tempted to give it a try. 'Cause I always thought you had to get a loom of size that would sit on the floor to be able to do much of anything, and you don't.
No, actually, there's a craft guild here in Iowa City that is weavers and knitters. Not, they don't do embroidery, but they do lots of different kinds of weaving and knitting and crochet and stuff like that. And they have an exhibit in the Coralville Library this month, August. And along with that, every weekend, they've got somebody there with some of these looms, like Libby was showing, you know, the ones that are just stand up.
Yeah, yeah.
And they left them on the table. It's kind of out in the common area. And some of them have paper strips that are woven through. So kids can sit down and create a picture with these paper strips.
Oh.
So I think there's two with paper strips and then there's two with yarn. So they let people come, you know, people can come by and watch them weaving or sit down and try it for themselves.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's just Saturdays or if it's Saturdays and Sundays, but it's been every weekend this month.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't usually go in there on the weekends, but I'm usually in there once a week or so. And so I thought that was really cool that they were doing this in conjunction with their little exhibit.
Yeah, yeah.
And they have some wonderful things in that exhibit.
Yeah.
We don't have our library doesn't have a big display place, but they do have a display case. It's built into a bookcase, you know, so it's not very big.
Yeah.
But it has several shelves that can be moved around. And so they've got lots of different really neat weavings and knitted things, some different kind of weaving that I wasn't familiar with at all. And I didn't really, it was unusual weaving. I can't remember what it was called.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it was, it's really a nice little exhibit.
Yeah.
So you might have some kind of a weaving guild or a craft guild or something like that in your area that you know, if you're really interested, you could look into it. But yeah. I was surprised at, you know, I mean, I didn't look at how much those little looms are, but what Libby said, you know, was not, it sounds like they're really inexpensive.
I looked them up. You can get a good quality one for $200-$250.
Now, was that the rigid heddle or the?
Yeah, the rigid heddle. The frame looms, those, I don't think cost much of anything.
Yeah.
The ones that she was showing. Yeah. No, I don't think those cost much of anything. I mean, they're sticks. They're basically stretcher bars for needlepoint. I mean, that was really all that was.
Yeah.
So, but that was the thing that I took out of it is with her book is you think of weaving, the infrastructure for weaving as being an investment. And it's not.
Right.
But then if you think back in time, weaving, it couldn't be an investment because people were weaving stuff with the crudest of apparatus and thread long before we had,
right,
you know, any kind of sophisticated wood handling material equipment, you know, long ago.
Right.
So.
Right.
Yeah,
and still do. Lots of people still weave using backstrap looms.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, the indigenous peoples in South America, maybe here in North America too. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, and so I would be maybe kind of interested in trying some of her little on a frame loom to make some bookmarks.
Mm-hmm.
With some of the cords and braids and things. Now, right. Did she talk about where to source materials in the book?
I don't recall that she does, no.
Because that, you know, that's one of the things. You can make beautiful tassels, but most of the tassels that are really nice are the thread is rayon, I think. You know, because that rayon really moves nicely. Mm-hmm. And you can't, I mean, there are rayon threads out there, but most of the time when we're making tassels, we're making them out of cotton threads. And the cotton threads just don't move the way the rayon does.
Yeah.
And they don't shine either.
Right, right.
So, yeah, you know, that's kind of...
That. Yeah, rayon hangs and, yeah, you're right, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a different, whole different ball game. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
But I love tassels, and I have several books on making tassels. I've made a few, but yeah, I'd like to look at the book and.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a good book. Yep. And, yes, I think, and I hope we're going to see more from her. Well, I'm sure we'll be seeing more from her, but I hope she does another book. Sounded like she had one in her head. So just a matter of executing it. Yeah. Easy for us to say. Yep.
And follow her on Instagram.
Yes.
Yep. To see the kinds of things that she's working on.
Yeah. She's pretty impressive. Yeah. Well, and that whole thing, what she said, there's four people in England who are still doing it. That's it.
Well, there's bigger companies.
Yeah.
But there's only four people who are individuals that are earning a living at it.
Right. And doing hand work at a high level. Yeah.
Right. Because you know what you find in the sewing stores, the big box stores for like upholstery, that's all machine made.
Right. Every bit of it. Yeah.
Probably in Asia somewhere.
Yeah. And cheap. And functional. Cheap. Functional.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. And some of it can look pretty good.
Yeah.
But, you know, like you say, you can't get the colors.
Nope. Nope.
You know, you can't get the beautiful reds and blues and oranges and.
Yeah.
You know, greens and all of that. Most of them are kind of pretty dull.
No, you stitch a piece with DMC or you stitch a piece with needlepoint ink silk, and then you have to compromise on your cording or your edging to get something that, that'll work. You know, it's okay. No, make your own. Just go buy some more skeins of the thread you use, and then perfect. That matches. It goes great. Or contrasts exactly the way you want it, but it's the same thread, so it is the same quality and the same look. You know, however you go about it.
Right.
And then cording, where you might have say four colors, and you want to use two for the cording, you can mix the two. And it'll match up just right. Yep. And like I said, you know, send that to the finisher. Say, here's the cord. I made it. Yeah.
Well, and I have given my finisher pearl cotton extra skeins of pearl cotton. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Because she's good at making cords. But, you know, that's if you make the cord, that's one less thing that the finisher is going to charge for.
That's right. Yep. Yeah. People complain all the time about how expensive finishing is. Help them out. Yep. So that was a good one. Somebody wrote in a comment that they had listened to the show and that it was so much more than they expected it would be.
Oh.
And I thought, nice. Bingo.
Yeah.
You know, it was kind of, I could just see it. Oh, all right, I'm not interested, but I'll listen. And then write a comment that, there's much more to it than they thought. Yeah. So.
yeah, it would have been nice if she'd had some samples to show.
Yeah, yeah.
But you did put some pictures in the slideshow.
Right.
For Instagram and Facebook.
Right.
Pictures from the book, I think.
Yeah, they were from the book, yeah. And then we did, last year in June, we did a show with her where we talked about her career. And so there are some pictures of her work. Her work is stunning, but you really got to go to her website to see her work because it's just absolutely, it's mind blowing. It's not, it's weaving like you just don't see. It's art.
Right.
I mean, it's pure art, you know.
Well, and you know, so that's a difficult thing to make a living at because I would imagine that there's a fairly substantial-ish demand for royal, you know, for the royals, for the military, maybe for the churches, you know, to do that kind of traditional fringes or, you know, other kinds of braids and that kind of thing. But she's doing more avant-garde kinds of things.
Yeah.
You know, that are going to be, you know, I was interested to hear that she has a designer, a fashion designer that she's doing braids for.
Yeah.
And maybe she works with interior decorators too for, you know, whatever. Right.
Well, that's her whole thing. The other people are more royals and traditional, but that's her whole thing is contemporary, passamontre. That's her whole thing. So yeah, she has interior designers. I mean, she's doing stuff and just creating art pieces for people to put on the wall all the time.
Yeah. I love the colors that she uses and the different sizes of the braids that she mixes together.
Yep. She's amazing.
Yeah.
And there's those things, that one and gold work threads and pieces that make me most nervous when you look at the future of needlework, because there's only I think there's just one left in England who's still making gold work. One family that's been doing it for like 3,000 years.
Yeah.
And you can get the stuff elsewhere.
Right.
But it's not always the same quality. And, you know, and these things are so old, these techniques and these materials are so old, and I'm sure you can't just go buy a new machine if yours breaks. If something breaks, you got to have somebody machine a new part for you. And, you know, they're going to die. They're just going to quit at some point. And then what are we going to do for good quality gold work material? You know, what do you do? You take a step down to cheaper stuff that's made in China or wherever it might be. I don't know. So it makes me nervous. And then these techniques, you know, you look at Yvette Stanton, all of her books. How many techniques, white work techniques, has she documented?
Right.
And by doing so, kept alive that would have just faded into the history.
Right.
Just gone.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, beautiful, beautiful techniques with beautiful pieces that come out of them, and they would have been gone. And, you know, I mean, you know, Yvette Stanton, it's a business, it's a love, it's a, you know, it's an art form for her and she loves to do it. But I look at her, and she's not the only one, but I look at her as a long-term person who is saving a form, part of history. Mm-hmm. She's, you know.
Right. That nobody else is really doing. You know, yeah, there's museums that have textile collections and they've, you know, maybe got all kinds of stuff in their collections that nobody really knows anything about because they don't understand the techniques.
Right.
You know, so they've preserved them, but they don't know how they were made.
Yeah. Right.
You know, whether it's the actual materials themselves or whether it's the techniques for making them or, you know, whatever. So museums are great for that, but not so much for preserving the actual technique and how to do it.
Yeah. And you look at Jessica Grimm is another one comes to mind.
Right.
That ancient 1400s stuff that she digs up and figures out how they do it and then puts together classes. And, you know, Mike Parr and Cindy. When we talked to him, they are doing the same kind of thing, figuring out some of these, you know, these guilds from long ago, some of these stitches that they have to figure out how to do them because they're not things that exist today that people do, and preserving all of that. But yeah, you're exactly right. A museum preserves it, the piece, but how did you do it? And can you do it? Can you repeat it? That's the different level. Yeah.
Yeah. So one of the podcasts I listen to is a fashion history podcast called Dressed.
Oh.
And they did a show about Fortuny. I don't know. And they just had their, they just celebrated their 500th show.
Oh.
So Fortuny was a designer, French designer, and he made these incredible pleated gowns. Nobody knows how he did the pleats.
Really?
They're really tiny knife pleats.
Uh-huh.
And the way the gowns are stored is that they kind of roll them up and tie them in a knot.
Really?
and that's how he said they should be stored.
I'll be darned.
You know, because that preserves the pleats. It's uh-huh. not a tight knot, but you know, they don't know how he achieved such perfect tiny pleats.
To this day, they can't figure it out.
To this day.
Wow. See, there's another one lost.
So you know? Yeah, Libby didn't mention this, but I'm sure that a lot of the issue was that so many of these things were done by guilds.
Mm-hmm.
And yep. guilds didn't want their secrets getting out.
Right. Yep.
They didn't want everybody to know how they did whatever because they had a monopoly on it.
Right. Yep. Yep.
You know, so whether it's manufacturing the threads or stitching or, and, you know, there are still guilds out there. The Broderers is one of them.
Yeah.
You know, but the secrecy isn't it there, I don't think, anymore these days. But I'm sure that's why a lot of techniques have been lost is because it was just a guild secret and
right.
everybody died out before it could be passed on or before it was okay to pass it on.
Yeah, yeah. And don't write it down and don't do any drawings because, yeah, we got to protect our income. Well, yeah, protect our source of income.
Sure.
Sure. Yeah. Yep. Can't blame them, but then we're the ones who lose out. Yeah.
Right. Well, and you know, nobody's thinking about posterity.
No. Oh, heavens you know. No. No. Well, and it's these people who take the time to figure these things out. You know, go to the museums, take the pictures, come back, sit there, and you know there's hours. It's with some of those things, you know it's hours of trial and error till it comes together. To do that, to have that much love and commitment for the mm-hmm. art form and
then share it.
And then share it. Document it yeah. and share it. Yep. So that others can experience the same thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, look at Yvette Stanton's library of books. I mean, she's library, borderline library status at this point. Look at the look at the techniques from mm-hmm. around the world where she's traveled mm-hmm. and met with the people who are still doing it or has studied the pieces in museums. And then she's illustrated and documented all that so you can do it. What a contribution, way beyond just publishing a book and making a few bucks off of it.
Mm-hmm.
Huge, long-term contribution. Yep.
Yep.
Yeah.
Priceless.
So it's, to me that is, you know, when it comes to needlework, one of the coolest things about it is that there's so much history
mm-hmm.
that in all of these techniques, because, you know, we look at cross-stitch and you're making little pillows and little, you know, monthly designs and that kind of stuff. And that's all fine. But behind that is eons of history and development and design work mm-hmm. that makes those simple things possible. I mean, you know, just take samplers alone. I mean, the history of the girls, yeah, that's fine. That's interesting to a point. They all pretty much have stories that fit into four or five different slots and, you know, whatever.
Right.
But then the Sampler Guild there in England is looking at some of the motifs and how they got passed through history.
The symbolism.
Countries. You know, symbolism. Thank you. But that, to be able to understand how that gets over there, and we've had a couple conversations with Barbara Hudson about mm-hmm. talking about how motifs and designs got to the States.
Well, and Krista kind of came at it sideways when you talked to her about mm-hmm. her book. She didn't really say it specifically, but so many of the motifs that you see associated with one country, you see with other countries as well.
Right. Yep.
they're changed a little bit, but you know, there's still the figures, the pomegranates, the, you know, any number of things that are changed a little bit by each different group that does them, but there's still a common thread.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I mean, I can see if at some point where someone learns enough about enough basic design elements that you could build a big poster with a map of the world. I mean, you could literally take that thing and say, we think it started here, but we don't know, because you really don't
know. Here's where the first evidence of it is.
Right. And then we see it here, and then there's a line, and we see it over here and up here. Yep. Yeah. Silk Road, and we see it dispersed throughout the world. Yeah, yeah. Or it came from Nordic countries and passed down to the south. You know, and I still think, I'm pretty sure I'm right on this, that there's a whole collection of things from South America that we don't see. Yeah. And that I think if someone were to dig into that, there's a whole world of South America, Central America art, needle art that...
Diane Herman has done some of that.
Has she?
Yeah. Some of her, well, we did a, she had a correspondence course through AMG several years ago that was based on a Mayan design. Mm. I think she's spent some time down in South America with some of the different indigenous peoples looking at their textiles.
Yeah. Yeah.
Pretty sure it's her. Yeah.
Well, we talked to someone a long time ago who had been doing work, I think, in Central America, but I don't remember who it was, because that's where I first learned about backstrap looms. But I don't remember.
Might have been Diane.
Might have been, yeah. I'm not sure. Yeah. Yeah. But there's a world there that's relatively untapped from our perspective. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
And a whole palette of colors that, yeah, we probably haven't seen, considered. I'm sure of it. Yeah, I have no doubt. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's interesting. It really is. A couple of things that we need to get on the board. Marg and I are working on our March Stitch Weekend, and actually about ready to sign a contract with the hotel. If you have been to the Galleria or know of it, it's held in near St. Charles in Embassy Suites, and that's where we're going to have this, because it really offers. There's a reason that they use that year after year: shopping, ease of access to the airport, easy to get to, plenty of room, and these people know exactly what Galleria has used. So for a lot of what we've been setting up, it's like, yeah, we know.
Right.
Yeah. So that's been great, because you don't have to paint them a picture. You just say, well, yeah, we know. Okay. Got it. So yes, great. So we're getting that put together. One of the things that we're planning is we want to have one or two tables during the weekend in the room where everybody's stitching, where you can go and get help or ask questions. So one of the things that people could help us out with are, what are some of the things that you would want help with? Mm-hmm. Between Beth and Robin and Cindy and Jennifer and I, we can help. But let us know, because then we'll put some structure to it. We want it to be loose, but we'll put some structure to it so that you can get help on your topic. But we want to set that up. And then the other thing will be a separate room that we're putting together, a separate room where we're going to have classes on Saturday, but not classes for here's how to start yet another project. Classes that are going to help you improve or expand your needlework. So if there are ideas, if people have ideas for what those might be, and those are just built into the cost. It's not going to be pay for the weekend and then pay extra for this class and extra for this class. No, it's just all in one package. And if we get sign up for beyond the room capacity for the class, then we'll add another one, because we've got it all day on Saturday. We have that room, so we'll just do it another time. So we want to accommodate as many as we can, but we're just going to do that on Saturday. So there'll be stitching Friday and Sunday in the main room, and we'll have those help tables. But then on Saturday, we'll have this extra room with classes where you sit in rows with the table in front of you and you have an instructor in front, but you can improve your stitching, learn things, color, whatever it might be. So looking, ideas, send us ideas, and then we'll see how we can put it together. So
do you have dates yet?
No, that's the part. Okay. We're getting ready to sign the contract, so that's going to be the question. What dates can we get? It looks like March is going to give us some flexibility. So as soon as we sign the contract, then we'll know what the dates are. That place is good. Busy.
Yeah.
They do a lot of stuff. It's I was kind of surprised, but and they're tied right to there's a convention center tied next to them, connected through a walkway or something. And I'm sure that drives an awful lot of it. But yeah, they've got a lot more meeting space than I thought when she gave us a tour of the place and all the things. I was impressed. They've just their own meeting space, not the convention that's next to them. So, so that's coming up. So we'll have all the details here, I would think, in the next couple weeks.
Right.
We'll get it all together. So that's going to be fun. Looking forward to that. You and Robin are going to the ANG seminar here next week, right?
Right.
It's going to be fun in Kansas City, right?
Kansas City, yep.
Yeah. Yeah, driving distance
for you. Yeah,
we're looking
forward to it.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. About 4.5 hours.
Can't beat that. Yep.
Nope.
So what are your plans? You got a class you're taking?
We're both taking a class from Lorraine Salt called Holst Meets Webb. Composer and Space Telescope.
Yeah.
So we'll have to show it to you the next time we have a live show after we get back. It's a 4-day class, so it's a larger piece.
Yeah.
So we're in class all day Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday.
Wow.
And then Wednesday afternoon, I think she signed up for this too. I signed up for a class on appraisal of needlework.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So
that'll be informative.
But so, there will be there's always a teacher's night where they have teachers, set up on tables with different things that they teach. I don't know if they have stuff you can buy. It's been a long time since I've been to a seminar. There's always a merchandise night where anybody, I think, can set up a table and sell whatever. So that will be fun.
Got to have a way to add to the stash. Yep.
Usually there's a store, a needlework store associated with the seminar. And in the past, there's been a bookstore too.
Oh.
And I don't know if they're still doing that, because I think the woman that used to do it I think she's not doing it anymore, just because she's aged, like we all have. And then, of course, there's the exhibit.
Mm-hmm.
So that's always a lot of fun to see.
Yeah, yeah. Now, do they do, like, EGA has an exhibit, but then they also have all the classes for next year on an exhibit. Do they do that at ANG? Of course, it's been a while for you, but do you recall?
I don't know. It's been probably 20 years since I went to a seminar.
So who knows what, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Basically fresh for you. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Technically not a first time attendee, but might as well be.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, that Lorraine Salt, if people want to look it up, it's Holst, Holst Meets Webb, Webb. Look that up. Holy smokes. That is going to, I can see why it's a 4-day class, but that is one mind blowing design. Oh man, that's something else. And you have to tell us how she got those circles so perfect. Wow. Wow. She's an incredible. We did a show with her, I don't know, 3 years ago, yeah. in the now getting to be distant past, but she
time flies.
Yeah, but when it comes to County Canvas, she really finds new levels.
She really does.
Yeah, it's incredible what she does and what she can pull off with thread layers. You know, there's layers to those things, but they're just stunning. You know, people say, "Oh, mm-hmm. County Canvas is, you know, just geometrics and it all looks the same." People always have things that no. You want take a look at Lorraine Salt. Yeah, that's I couldn't believe that when you told me the class and I looked at that thing. I mean, I have to say my jaw dropped. It's like, wow, lady, that's a design. That's impressive. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, and what a great challenge, too, for a design. Mm-hmm. That's really good. Yeah. So, well, it'll be interesting to hear your experiences after you get back. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, at some point, is it 10 or 15 years, if you haven't been, that you just go back to the new status? I'm not sure.
I don't know.
Yeah. First time attendee with an asterisk or something. Yeah. Well, that'll be great.
Yeah, so I don't know how many people are attending. We're in a Hyatt in downtown Kansas City, and everything is in the hotel.
Okay.
So, you know, we aren't going walking to a convention center nearby or anything like that. It's all in the hotel.
Yeah.
Some stuff, classes are on like maybe the third floor and some stuff is on the second floor. And plenty of walking still, but
right.
You know, it's all right there.
Yeah. Right. In the same building. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'll be interested because one of the things I enjoyed the last EGA seminar we went to that I enjoyed was the people just sitting out in the lobby areas stitching.
Yeah.
I just thought that was just one of the coolest things was I don't have a class and I'm here at a stitching event and I'm just going to stitch, you know, people two or three getting together, whatever, mm-hmm. and just stitching. Yeah. What fun.
Right.
Yep.
Right.
So,
okay. Well, and really that's the fun thing about these seminars is just being with other people that are love what you love to do. And, you know, get to meet people. You know, I've been with president of CyberPointers for 3 and a half years, and I haven't met any of the other officers in person.
Yep.
So they won't all be there, but I'll get to meet some of them and some of the other members.
Yep.
You know, so yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
And isn't that, you know, this in this world of social media, the number of people you know that you've never been in the same room. It's like when we went to Sassy Jack's, the mm-hmm. five of us, and says if we'd never all been in the same room.
Right.
Yet
right.
We've talked for hours and hours and hours.
Yeah.
And but technology just allows you to do that. So, yeah, I wonder how many people you'll run into that you've seen their name on Needlepoint Nation or
right
wherever. Yeah. And you finally get to meet them. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So cool.
Well, and teachers, too.
Yeah.
I know Curtie Biggs is teaching. I don't think Debbie's at this one. I can't remember. But, yeah, there's... You know, it's an opportunity. One of the things about the teacher showcase is that it's an opportunity for people from local guilds to look to see what the teachers have available for local guilds. You know, if they want to bring a teacher in or, you know, mm-hmm. Do a workshop, then that gives us an opportunity to see what's available.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. So you can actually do some planning just mm-hmm. by showing up. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and so many of the Khan Academy teachers, designers are designing and teaching their own classes. And, you almost got to tap into each one to find out what they have to offer. So, yeah.
Yeah, there isn't another good way.
No.
That I've found. that, you know, to really help us learn about, especially about new designers.
Right.
You know, right. And I hope there are new designers out there, but I don't know.
Yeah.
Don't I have a local needlework shop anymore.
Yeah. So, that, you know, and that's just it. Yeah. When there's no local needlework shop, you don't, a lot of these things, if you're not seeing them in a shop, you don't, unless you trip over them online, you just don't know they exist. Right. And it's a tough, tough thing.
Right.
Yeah. And that's, yeah, especially with Counted Canvas designs. It really is gotten to be a thing that's kind of bugged me here lately, is the Counted Canvas designs. I mean, we have so many. Loreen Salt is, you know, a classic example, just brilliant designers. And somehow Counted Canvas has gotten left out, isn't the right word, but it just isn't part of the mainstream, I guess.
I know. I don't know what's happened.
Yeah. I had an idea for a show, and that had to do with Needlepoint. And I spent more time than I should have going through Needlepoint Nation and a couple of other Facebook groups looking for questions that people were asking about how-to questions. And I didn't find any, but what happened to me was I found almost, I would say, 90%. And this was in Needlepoint Nation. Obviously, there's Counted Canvas, Needlepoint Nation, or whatever it's called, which is all Counted Canvas. But 90-plus percent of what's in Needlepoint Nation is painted canvas. Mm-hmm. And as I'm going through all these posts, I'm going, where's the Counted Canvas in this? And it virtually non-existent. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, sure, they have their own group, but not a group the size of Needlepoint Nation.
Right.
By a long shot. And then, so is that what Needlepoint is becoming, is painted canvas?
Yeah, you know, some of it is what people post. I mean, I do post my stuff on Facebook, but I don't make an effort to post it on those groups.
Yeah.
On a regular basis. So, you know, some of that is the Stitcher that just is not sharing their work.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I, you know, some people just don't like to share their work.
Yeah.
So
yeah. True to that.
I don't know how to encourage that.
Yeah. I don't know either, but you know, here in St. Louis, we have two Needlepoint stores and it's all painted canvas. Mm-hmm. Almost 100. I think I could safely say 100% painted canvas, two of them that have been in business a long time. You know, they're not hurting in St. Louis. Well, I don't know about their finances, but I mean, they're still in business and they still have people in them. Right. And it's all painted canvas. Mm-hmm. But I don't enjoy painted canvas. So, I mean, that's not a secret. I enjoy Counted Canvas. To me, that's where the challenge is, the fun is. That's actually my favorite thing to do, though in the last couple of years I haven't done much of it, but it really is my favorite thing to do is Counted Canvas.
Yeah,
and
me
so
too.
It bugs me when, you know, why isn't that playing a major role with cross-stitch and painted canvas? Why doesn't Counted Canvas have almost an equal presence? I don't understand it. But then, you know, and then you look at the latest issue of Needlepointers, the A&G magazine, and they had one painted canvas and the rest was all Counted Canvas. So there's some presence there in that one issue. That's a sample of one, so don't, you know, statistically meaningless. But but at least the A&G is recognizing Counted Canvas and putting that in their magazine and not just a token piece.
And the bulk of the offerings at the seminar are Counted Canvas.
Oh, okay.
So there might be one or two. I don't think there's any actual, here's the canvas, we're going to stitch it.
Uh-huh.
But there might be a couple of classes where you bring your canvas and they help you find stitches and threads. I'm not I'm not really sure. It's been a while since I looked at the class lineup, but most of the classes are some form of counted canvas, or, you know, it might be, I don't, it could be black work or other things that are in the needlepoint world, according to ANG. But yeah, not at the seminar, there's not a preponderance of painted canvas by any means.
Right. It's just a baffling thing in that, you would think, and the barrier to entry for counted canvas is considerably lower than painted canvas, because you don't have to buy that painted canvas.
Right.
I mean, when it comes to beginner, new people, someone who wants to try I'm sure that you could line up 100 people and find 60 of them who've been to a painted canvas shop and walked in, saw the prices on canvases and just said, nope, not for me. Mm-hmm. Well, counted canvas. You just need a blank piece of canvas, some threads, and a chart, and you're off and running.
Yeah, I have to think that a big part of it is the disappearance of the local needlework shops.
No.
Or the local needlework shops that concentrate on cross stitch.
Mm-hmm.
And don't carry the counted canvas patterns, or the shop that we had up in Cedar Rapids for so long. We actually, at one point, we had two needlework shops in Cedar Rapids, and they both had a good mix of counted canvas and cross stitch, very little painted canvas.
Yeah.
But, you know, they did classes on the counted canvas, or, you know, we'd get a group together and do a particular counted canvas project. So there was always something going on, but now they're gone.
Yeah.
You know, so we're not seeing new patterns. We're just not seeing what's available.
Right.
I kind of feel like that's probably a big reason for counted canvas disappearing. I don't know that for sure, but.
Yeah. Yet the designers are active.
Yeah.
Doing online classes, a lot of them doing online classes. I mean, they're active. It's not like they've gone away. And new designs are coming out, but they aren't retail designs. They're for classes. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, or they're teaching for seminars, or right. for guilds, for chapters.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And those designs get tied up for effectively 2 years, a year ahead of time and a year after.
Oh, yeah, at least.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's kind of a drawback there. If you don't go to mm-hmm. seminar and take the class, it's a year plus before that actually can be taught somewhere else. And,
right.
You know, that's just part of the rules of the game, but, yeah.
Yeah. You know, for ANG members and probably for EGA members too, you can join other chapters to get access to, you know, if there's a particular project you want and San Diego chapter is doing it, you can join their chapter.
Yep.
And get the, you know, basically ghost the class, you know, you get the kit and all of that. You're not there for the actual live part of it, but that's one way to.
Right.
And once you're a member of ANG, it's usually not all that expensive to join other chapters.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just like 20, 25 bucks a year or something. I don't know. Something like that. Yeah. And say, well, yeah, but I don't want to spend that. Well, compare that to traveling to San Diego to take a class, it's cheap. But that's, you know, and that you're exactly right. If you have any experience at all stitching counted canvas, all you need is the chart. Really, all you need is the chart. And so you can, you know, first question is, can I ghost the class? Well, yes, you can. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, sometimes they'll offer just the chart. Sometimes it's the kit. Sometimes it's, it just depends.
Well, and there's also the Shining Needle Society.
Yes.
They offer counted canvas and cross stitch basically on a regular basis, they have counted Canvas classes.
And that's a steady stream of classes there.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And no membership fee or anything like that. You know, you just get on their mailing list, join their groups.io group, and then they, you know, when they've got a new class, they send out the information, and then you join, and they do it all through groups.io. The lessons are done through that.
Don't have to travel. Just sign up.
Don't have to travel. I've taken a ton of classes through them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And that's been going on for years. So that's a well-established system.
Yeah.
They know how to do it and do it right. Yeah. And
yes, they've
done it successfully. Yeah. Yeah. So, well, it's an interesting aspect, but we're going to run out of time here. So we put together just before the show a whole new segment. Literally before we hit record, a whole new segment of tool talk. We'll call it tool talk just because that's easy. So, Cindy's idea, what tools do you use for needlework that you don't get at the needlework store?
Right.
Or I'm sure you can, but your better source is somewhere else.
It depends on how long we go on with this. You know, it's really just thinking about tools that we use that, are useful in one way or another. Maybe tools that, like Gary said, that we didn't get at the local needlework shop. So, just things that we like that we use a lot.
Yep. Okay, so the first one we had already is the clamp.
Yes, the clamp.
So that clamp has lots of uses.
Yeah. So I use mine for holding a frame on the table when I'm out stitching someplace else where I don't have my frame, my floor frame or my lap frame. Yep. And this keeps the project steady so that I can use both hands.
Yep.
And I use two. Usually I just have one here right now, but This is great.
Yep. Get those Lowe's, Home Depot in the tools section, wood clamps or just clamps, and there's a truckload of them.
Yeah, and so you open it up so that it's wide enough to fit your table and your frame, and then you just use this to ratchet it down so that it's tight.
Yeah.
It's not going down very good.
Yeah.
Very good. But
yeah,
or you can, move it up and down.
Right.
But this will tighten it. Oh, there. I wasn't pushing it enough.
two triggers on these things for the people who are not watching the video. There's one that is the gross movement, large, and then there's a second trigger on the handle that then you squeeze that, and that gives you the fine movement so you can get it tight, however tight you want it. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Irwin is probably the most well-known clamp of this type, though there's all kinds of them. Ace, Home Depot, Lowe's, and of course Amazon.
Of course.
Yeah, but all different sizes, and like the one that you have there, I mean that's drop in the tote bag size.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
That's where it lives. Lives in my tote bag.
Yep. Yep. Just put it in there and forget about it. Then you always have something to hold your frame to a table. Yeah.
Yep.
So, okay, there's one. You had two.
Okay. Yes. So this is a flashlight.
I got to get one of these. I got to get one of these.
But it's also extendable. And it has a little, this one bends. They don't all bend. Plus, got a magnet on the end.
Yep.
So you drop your needle on the floor, you pull this out, extend it, turn the light on, and start, sweeping over the floor until you find your needle.
Yep. Now I have the extendable one with a magnet on the end, but it does not have a light, and I got to get one with a light because that's the next level. Yeah.
Yep. And it folds down into you know, I don't know, it's a little longer than a pencil. And this, I have two of these. This one lives in my sewing bag, my tote bag that I take with me wherever I'm going to stitch. So, you know, if I'm at the library or it doesn't matter where, coffee shop, whatever, somebody drops a needle, you know, this comes out and we find it.
Yep.
And it works for carpet too, but it works really nicely on a hard floor, but you can find your needles in carpet too.
Yep. That is cool. Now, just before the show, when Cindy showed me that, I knew the magnets existed because I own one, but I didn't know they came with a light. So we went to the Big A and searched. Eight. Now, be careful here. $8. So it was just, you know, in the tools section, $8. Then there was a sewing company, a company selling for sewing, like sewing machine type sewing. Mm-hmm. Identical thing for $13.
Yep.
So get the one from the tool.
Like it always is, you know, if you get it. I mean, so many of these things came from other uses. I think this one is for mechanics. So you probably could get it in an auto supply store. But the needle workers saw it and thought, oh, that would work.
Yep.
For me. And yeah, so I've got another one here in the house where I sit and stitch, so that because I will drop my needles all the time, I can find it easily. And I run around barefoot, but even if you're not, you know, even if you wear slippers or whatever in your house, if you've got a needle on the floor, especially in carpet, it can stand up and go right through the sole of your shoe.
Yep.
So needles, pins, you know, when I was doing a lot of clothing construction, I used to usually had a cup of tea sitting on my, you know, on my sewing machine cabinet. Half the time I'd be putting the pins in the teacup.
Oh, no.
Instead of the pin holder. So I had to move the teacup a little farther away from where I was stitching.
Oops. Yeah.
But yeah, invaluable tool.
Yep. You know, and worth, just from a safety perspective, because nothing freaks me out more than having three needles on a needle minder and then there's only two.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Whoa. Find that sucker right now, because through the bottom of the foot is not what you want to sign up for. No.
No.
So. Yeah, quick story. When I was teaching, high school science. So, you know, teenagers of all levels. Mm-hmm. One day, this kid, a young man, it was a farm community, so a lot of them wore work boots to school because they would do chores, go to school, go home, do chores. I mean, it was just reality.
Right.
He decided one day, I was over helping somebody else. It was a lab. We were doing a lab. And so, you know, the kids are kind of on their own and I'm wandering around. He decided he wanted to see what would happen if he stood a pencil up and stomped on it. He hit it square, went through his work boot and into his foot.
Oh, no.
I will never, ever forget. And of course, as a teacher, you never leave your classroom unsupervised.
Right.
Probably rule number one, whatever. I had to leave my classroom unsupervised to help that young man get down to the office where the ambulance was on its way. You know, you call down, say, hey, I got this. I got to, you know, and I'll never forget it. And, you know, and whenever a needle goes down, I always think of him. It'll go right through. Yep. Surprise, surprise. And the kids were all just shocked, like, oh no, what's this? Because it was the lead end. So, of course, you got the graphite into your foot and everything. It's like, oh. plus whatever was on his boot. Who knows what that is?
Oh, yeah.
So, all right, that's your teaching story of the day. Okay, my tool talk thing is from a dentist. The dental hygienist, the little tool that the dental hygienist used to scrape tartar off your teeth, clean your teeth. Mm-hmm. I was in one day, and it occurred to me while I was getting my teeth cleaned, I said, hey, you know, do you have these that you just, they wear out for, you know, they're no good as a dental thing. Do you have these that wear out? She says, no, I really don't. She says, I throw them away or they get shipped back and recycled. They get new ends put on them and then I get them back or any number of things. And then as I was leaving, the dentist came out to the lobby area and he says, come here just a second. And he went into a room and he gave me this one. He says, I have these. They're just a pile of them in there. Here, take this. And what are you going to use it for? Okay, here we go. Yeah. I said, you're not going to believe this, but I'm going to use it for needlework. And what? Just don't ask. Just trust me on this. So he gave me this, you know, this pick thing that has a sharp edge and a curved, you know, it's got, they got a curved end on them. And, but especially with needlepoint, if you're trying to pick something out, you know, if you pin stitch something and it simply won't come out with a needle, you go in there with this thing, or if you need to cut a thread that is just really hard to get scissors under or a seam ripper, this little hook thing will get in there and pull it out. And you don't use it often, but you know, when you use it, you're glad you have it. And then I started looking. You can buy these things. You can buy dental equipment stuff from dental supply places all day long. So,
and probably Amazon, too.
I'm sure of that. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, so this is a hand. And then you start looking in the dental supply thing at all of the little tools they have for getting in nooks and crannies. And you start going, well, wait a minute. I could use this, and I could use this, and I could use this. But, yeah, I've used this, I don't know, maybe I've had it 3-4 years, probably used it a half dozen times, but each time, glad I had it. Yep.
It's the right tool for the job.
Yep. That's right.
So yeah, we have a school of dentistry here at the University of Iowa. I bet the student bookstore.
Yep.
I know they have dissection kits and that sort of thing. I bet they have dental tools.
You know they do. Standard kit for the class. Yep.
Yep. And yeah, so student, another place to get them.
At student rates, too.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, you know there is. There's a book for Dental Hygiene 101. There's a book, and then there's a kit of tools. You know there is. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. So there you go. All right. So that's our first installment, Tool Talk. Get a clamp, get a magnet with a light, extendable magnet, and go to the dental shop and get yourself a picking tool. Yep. All right. That's going to be it. We're done. Oh, no show this Labor Day weekend coming up here. Not going to be a Sunday show. Okay. Not going to be a Sunday show. I'm going to do the, for the people in Europe, it's our equivalent of a bank holiday. So we're off Monday. So I'm just going to be selfish and, have the weekend and then we'll be back, the following, back on schedule, after that. But so no show on Sunday because I'm just going to be selfish is what that's going to be.
Good for you.
All right. That's it. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye.